Hello everyone, Brian Newbert here from GoldenBlack.com. Flying solo this week. Alan and Tom have bailed on me. I've finally done it. I have finally alienated my coworkers to the point they won't even talk to me over Zoom. In all seriousness, this is your GoldenBlack.com Saturday simulcast. I am flying solo this week. It just felt like the thing to do because there's a lot of stuff going on atypically for a late June weekend. And it all happens to involve my fields of relative expertise. I would never, ever call myself an expert in anything other than incompetence. But this stuff is all my responsibility, I should say. So I figured I would just give Tom the weekend off here from yelling at me on our podcast and kind of do this myself. So this is, once again, your GoldenBlack.com Saturday simulcast. It is brought to you by our friends at the Premium Club Hotel, home of the Boiler Up Bar and the 811 Bistro. It is a really nice place, let me tell you. You should keep it in mind next time, anytime, and every time you visit Purdue University's campus. You will not be sorry. And yes, I just made that up off the top of my head. That is not an officially sanctioned pitch. That was me riffing, winging it. And I think that was pretty damn good. I don't know about you. But as I mentioned before, this late June weekend now is a pretty busy deal because a few years back, the NCAA allowed for June football official visits. Also, in the NCAA's infinite wisdom, they allowed for more college basketball evaluation periods. The June ones involving high school events, scholastic events, because there has never in the history of basketball ever once been a crooked high school coach. Only everybody else has been the problem with college basketball. Never have any problems stemmed from the most purest and angelic people among us. I am, of course, being sarcastic because where there are players, there is money and there are corners to be cut. So demonizing this group over that group has always been a flawed approach by the NCAA. But that's kind of what the NCAA does, flawed approaches. It's kind of its thing. Anyway, so now at the end of June here, you've got football official visits, you've got basketball evaluation period, and you know there's a lot going on for Purdue here. I don't know what more I can tell you here that I haven't already at goldenblack.com via the written word, but it is my understanding that the written word is quickly being pushed toward extinction. So here we are talking to you in video and audio form, depending on your method of distribution here. But I'll start with football recruiting. You know, Purdue's at 10 commitments right now. Depending on time you're watching this, they might be at... wait a minute, I got my numbers all mixed up. Hang on. Purdue's got 9 commitments right now. Depending on what time you're watching this, they might have 10. Me completely botching that sentence probably tells you what you need to know about Saturday, when Carmel High School's Will Helt will announce his decision between Purdue and Iowa. I like Purdue's chances there. We shall see. But, you know, Purdue's putting together a really nice defensive class here. They've got 4 defensive line commitments that are all good-looking recruits on paper and in person, those I've seen in person. Between edge rushers Micah Carter, and if they get Will Helt, he would be another edge rusher. Defensive tackles Sadiq Clement and Drake Carlson, both are guys with good-looking frames, good-looking offer sheets, good-looking a lot. So Purdue's doing a good job from a defensive perspective recruiting. I think the next step here is to get the offensive stuff going. I think the biggest thing that could have happened for Purdue in June and recruiting, on top of all these guys they've gotten and on top of all the guys they're going to get here after June, and there will be some. The biggest thing that could happen for Purdue this June was to solidify the commitment of Ricky Collins, the quarterback from New Orleans, who's one of the best dual threat quarterback prospects in the country. He has visited Florida State. He has been offered and heavily recruited by Oregon. Seems to me like all quiet kind of on the Western Front there. Seems to me from afar, and I could certainly be wrong here, that Ricky Collins is good with Purdue right now, is pretty solid with Purdue right now. I always want to throw in the qualifier right now, He does live in SEC country. There is still NIL money to be thrown around semi-legally. And there are suitors for Ricky Collins. As I mentioned before, Florida State and Oregon. Now that Arch Manning has committed to Texas, that is going to probably create a little bit of a game of dominoes where some schools who've really put a lot of time into Arch Manning now have to go figure out what they are going to do at quarterback if they don't already have a quarterback. Typically quarterbacks commit early, so this kind of stuff resolves itself early. But some of those schools down there had to put all of their eggs in the Arch Manning basket because, you know, he's that level of recruit, as evidenced by the fact that, like, national news outlets covered his commitment for some reason. I don't know when college football recruiting became so important that actual news outlets are posting stories about a player's commitment. But nevertheless, I do think Purdue's in a good spot right now to retain Ricky Collins. We shall see where they are here in a couple months when it matters. But as I said before, that's the biggest thing that could have happened for Purdue this June, was to hold on to Ricky Collins, because he's one of the best players in the country. He was a coup, C-O-U-P, not coup, like the sound a baby makes. He was a coup back months ago. I was actually at Big Ten Basketball Media Day, so that would have been October, I guess, right, that he committed to Purdue in the first place. That was something that seemed almost too good to be true, given how good Ricky Collins is, or how highly regarded he is, consequently how good he is. And it seemed there for a while here in the spring that, oh, it was going to be too good to be true, because here come all these other schools out of Marty Biagi, who was one of his lead recruiters, Purdue's New Orleans guy, left, stuff like that. It just looked like, things were going to be really tough for Purdue there. But ever since the official visit to Purdue, as I said before, every indicator has been that Ricky Collins is, you know, pretty good with Purdue right now. And that is enormous. On top of Purdue putting together a really nice defensive class, you have to get some offensive skill players here. I think that's the question for Purdue this coming season. Who is Aiden O'Connell going to be throwing the ball to? Who's going to be carrying the ball? You know, so on and so forth. Purdue's brought in some transfers, obviously, to come in and try to help them right away. But Purdue's got to get those next guys. You know, the one thing Purdue's been able to do under Jeff Brohm has been to recruit a lot of talented high school wide receivers. And, I think this year is about, Tyrone Tracy stepping in right away and helping them. Mershon Rice, TJ Sheffield, that generation of guys, staying healthy and kind of delivering on their promise a little bit. But you got to backfill there. You have to get, keep that line going. You have to keep that competition and practice going, stuff like that. Purdue's got a bunch of slot receiver types on official visits this weekend. I'd anticipate them getting commitments from somebody from that position. They're really emphasizing kind of, based on the profile of three kids visiting this weekend, it's about, speed and quickness over size, kind of that classic slot receiver type of thing. I don't want to say the Rondell Moore mold, because I don't want to compare, some of these guys coming in to Rondell Moore. But, I think Purdue systematically can make guys like that successful, too. When they're surreal athletes the way Rondell Moore was, it's certainly a lot easier. But I think systematically Purdue can make some of those guys successful. Look at what Jackson Anthrop did in Purdue's system here this past year. So Purdue's, going to be barreling toward double-digit commitments here pretty soon. I think they'll go into fall with, 15 commitments, whatever it might be, something in that ballpark. That'll be the majority of your class. Obviously, nowadays, you're holding back a lot of you're holding back some scholarships for the transfer portal in the spring. Purdue will be in that every year, as will most programs in the country. If you don't have to recruit transfers, you're in a pretty good spot as a program. But it's almost inevitable, because everybody's going to lose transfers. So if you're losing transfers, chances are you have to go get transfers. So, Purdue's going to need space in the spring every year to recruit, whether they're going to hold spots back in the summer or whether they're just going to allow the natural attrition that occurs during a season account for the scholarships they use in the transfer portal. I don't know, but rest assured, Purdue will be very active in the transfer portal this spring, next spring, the spring after that, and every spring until the end of time. As long as college football exists, as long as the transfer portal is a thing, as long as Purdue is operating as a football program, Purdue will be recruiting transfers. Switch gears here to basketball recruiting. I am just, this has got to be exhilarating for you just listening to this idiot just talk. You know, this is the second high school evaluation period of June, which will then lead right into the July evaluation period. So what purpose this all serves, I have no idea. But obviously, if coaches can be out watching recruits, they are obligated to be out watching recruits. So it's not to say Purdue's not getting anything out of this. They've got to extend their pool in 2023, probably find some more big guys to recruit, because it's very evident they're going to oversign and try to get a big guy in that class to go along with Draven Gibbs, Lawhorn, and Miles Colvin, who are two outstanding perimeter-oriented recruits Purdue has committed. Purdue's got to extend its 2024 pool. It's got a pretty big one right now, which is you know, going to be something they're going to have to manage through the course of the next year, because much like everybody else in college basketball right now, Purdue has no idea how many scholarships it has in 2024. So thanks to the transfer portal and thanks to some of the other changes that have occurred in college basketball, thanks to the COVID year, coaches are recruiting as blind as they ever have. They are recruiting with the inability to plan, with the inability to have certainty long-term. Purdue has four juniors on its roster. That would account for your 2024 class. All of those juniors will be eligible for COVID years. You have no idea if any of them will take, you know, the NCAA up on that offer. Zach Edey, I think we can all agree, is most likely probably going to be playing professional basketball at this time, either next year or the year after that. The likelihood of him playing a fifth year of college basketball is extremely remote. You know, Brandon Newman and Mason Gillis, you look at them and, you know, how many guys want to be in college for 6 years? They would be, because they both redshirted. So you look at those guys and say, I don't know. Ethan Morton would be the guy who would make the most sense, because his freshman year, you know, was such a wash. You could essentially make that a redshirt year. You know, play that extra year of college basketball, give yourself the best chance you can to be the best player you can be. But also, he's a guy who, you know, and a lot can change here in the next couple of years, but he's a guy who seems to like it at Purdue. Purdue certainly likes having him. So that's the one guy I would kind of look at as, you know, the most likely possibility to take that COVID year at the end of his career. We're talking 3 years down the line here, 2-3 years down the line here. So that you're, I'm just putting a face on what the coaches have to deal with right now. They're recruiting a class not knowing how many scholarships they're going to have. Now, obviously, players could transfer out before then, too. Transfers can transfer in, obviously, if Purdue has some sort of urgent, desperate need after next season that they have to address. So this can all change. And it will change, most likely. So Purdue has just offered a bunch of guys in 2024, and they have to figure it out. But it starts, you know, this summer, really in earnest, because the likelihood is that some of these 2024 guys are going to start committing here pretty soon. Because I think as we go on with this new world order in college recruiting, I think one thing you're inevitably going to see is some of these guys who get early offers really start to understand, hey, I've got this offer now, I think I want to go there, or I know I want to go there, and I understand that if this scholarship sits open for very long, you know, an attractive transfer pops up to the school that I want to go to, that scholarship could go away. That sort of dynamic has always existed in recruiting, but I think it exists even more now than it used to because of the transfer portal and the kind of microwave nature of recruiting now, where if you need something, you want something, you can have it in 2 seconds. Ready-made, hot and ready to eat, whatever the hell that means. But, you know, Purdue goes to the Charlie Hughes shootout for the most part this weekend. That's the signature high school event during the June evaluation periods. They will be watching all the usual suspects. They will have someone at every game Cannon Catchings plays in, the wing from Brownsburg, who I think, you know, is the guy who should probably be considered the guy in 2024 for Purdue right now, because I think he's really good, and I think Purdue can get him. And I think he's that guy that, you know, doesn't look anything right now like what he's going to look like 3 years from now. I've kind of drawn loose comparisons to Jaden Ivey in that regard, where this is a guy who's only just now, you know, starting to figure things out. He's only now becoming a high-end player. He's got unbelievable genetics. He's got the same kind of WNBA background that Jaden Ivey did. So he comes from a family of pros. He comes from a family of professional athletes. He's got all the physical upside in the world. He's got all the skill in the world. And I just think that's the guy for Purdue right now. If you ask me who's the most important guy for them in 2024, that's the guy, Cannon Catchings. He's got height. He's got length. He's got a jumper. He's got upside. He's got an awesome name. And he checks a lot of boxes. So that's the guy I would really kind of focus everybody toward if you want to know who's at the center of the whole 2024 search right now. I think 2023 is basically down to Xavier Booker. That's the one guy who's been a target from start to finish here. You know, Purdue was there back in December when he was kind of really up and down, and you watched him and you said, hey, I don't know, you know, if this guy's really, really as consistent as he needs to be, as productive as he needs to be to justify the level he was getting recruited at. I think Purdue, you know, probably like a lot of people, might have, you know, cooled off a little bit here and there. I don't know. You know, scholarships have been a complication for Purdue too. But that's the guy, you know, Purdue wants. That's the guy a lot of people want. He's the number two player in the country right now, according to Rivals.com. I think that might be a little bit much. But he certainly has all the upside in the world, all the potential in the world. I think Purdue's probably a little bit behind the Michigan States, maybe Notre Dame a little bit. I expect them to get a visit in the fall. We'll see what happens when he starts listening to Duke and Gonzaga and all the other people coming at him right now. It's the classic case of word getting out about a kid that a lot of other programs in the country never bothered to watch, never really looked into before. And all of a sudden, when his name jumps up the rankings or certain things get out there on the internet in terms of some of the things he's capable of from a highlight perspective, all of a sudden, hey, here comes everyone right now. So I think Purdue's in there. I think they're going to have to hang tight with him. They're going to have to, you know, just keep working on him. Just get him on campus in the fall for that official visit. He just visited Purdue unofficially the other day. Anytime a number two player in the country comes on his own dime to see you, that's a pretty good deal, even if it is just an hour up the road. So that's another guy to follow this summer, Xavier Booker in 2023. Purdue's extending other offers in that class too. They're going to look for other big men to recruit because there are no guarantees with Xavier Booker, obviously. But I think it's him in 2023. It's Cannon Catchings among a bunch of other guys in 2024, and that's kind of Purdue's focus here this summer. You know, Purdue right now in basketball recruiting is looking for its next pro. I think they have guys in the pipeline here who are going to have chances to be NBA players. I think Miles Colvin is Purdue's going to be one of Purdue's most talented guys that they've signed. Nothing he wants for from a talent perspective, from a physical gifts perspective. He's going to have to produce at the college level, obviously, but I think that that's a guy who's got a chance to be, you know, play basketball for a very long time and earn a pretty decent living doing it. You know, Draven Gibbs-Lawhorn, I think, can be a really good player at Purdue. What his pro prospects might be, I don't know quite yet. That's a long way away. Why I'm even talking about that, I'm just killing time here. But I think there's some guys on Purdue's roster right now, too, who are going to have a chance. Zach Edey obviously will have a chance to get drafted next year or the year after that. I think Caleb First and Trey Kaufman Wren are some guys long-term, Brian Waddell potentially, that are going to be in that mix. But obviously Purdue just had its highest drafted player since Glenn Robinson on Thursday night with Jaden Ivey. And I think Jaden, you know, everybody's saying the Detroit Pistons, who drafted Ivey fifth, are one of the big winners of the draft. And they are, because I think they had an unbelievable draft getting Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren to join what is already a good young team that ended this past season playing very well. But I think Jaden Ivey is one of the big winners in this draft too, individually. Because when you look at it, and I wrote about this for weeks before the draft, where the best fits would be for him. When you look at Ivey, you know, he didn't go to Sacramento. He didn't want to go to Sacramento. His agents didn't want him to go to Sacramento. I wouldn't want to go to Sacramento. Yes, I actually would want to go to Sacramento. For an NBA contract, I'd happily go to Sacramento. But if I had good options, I would not want to go to Sacramento, because there's a reason they're in the lottery every year. Because they are, you know, one of the worst organizations in professional sports. You'd be going all the way to California to go play with, you know, De'Aaron Fox and Davion Mitchell, some other guards that they have really invested in. There's some redundancies there with De'Aaron Fox. Just a bad franchise, too. You know, that Tyrese Halliburton trade is going to be one they come to regret, I'd imagine. But I think the best fit for Ivy has always been was either Detroit or Indiana, because I think with the Pistons, putting him next to Cade Cunningham, putting him with Killian Hayes, Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart, whatever they can get in free agency this year, maybe DeAndre Ayton, that's a good young team that's going to have a chance to grow together. I think that Ivy's scoring and Ivy's explosiveness can be a really good complement to Cade Cunningham, who's going to be an NBA star. I think Cade Cunningham's game is such that he can take on a lot of responsibility and he can take a lot of pressure off Ivy to deliver right away. Had the New York Knicks been able to trade up like they desperately wanted to get Jaden Ivey, he goes into New York and he's got to be a star right away, because that's why they drafted you. New York is desperate for a star, but in Detroit, you can kind of ease into it because you got Cade Cunningham there to be that load-bearing wall, you know, for your team. So I think that really benefits Jaden Ivey quite a bit and gives him his best chance to be successful. Because when you look at Jaden Ivey at Purdue, obviously you were looking at a guy who's only now really seeing that light come on. You saw a player who got better and better and better. Obviously he didn't play great every game, but the difference between the start of his freshman year to the end of his freshman year, and then the end of his freshman year to the start of his sophomore year, and then the start of his sophomore year to the end of his sophomore year. You just saw a player transforming in front of your eyes. His best basketball is going to be played not at Purdue, but, you know, most likely with the Detroit Pistons. And, you know, he's going to be twice the player in three to 4 years than he is right now. And I just think the Pistons are a great fit for him. I think he's a great fit for the Pistons. The fact he's 3.5 hours from home, it's been well documented how close he and his mother are. I think it'll be really important for him to be able to have his mom come to games sometimes, which would not have been very easy in Sacramento with, obviously, his mom's schedule at Notre Dame. I think this is a really good deal personally, too, for Ivy. He and his family have a lot of ties to Detroit. He's now the fourth member of his family to play professional sports in Detroit, which is remarkable. 3.5 hours from South Bend, once again, still in the Big Ten footprint. He knows well. Great situation for Jaden Ivey, if you ask me. Great situation for Jaden Ivey. I don't think they played together, but Isaiah Stewart went to Lalamere too. So there's a little bit of a commonality there between Ivey and Stewart. They didn't play together, so I don't know how much it matters, but just a good fit for Jaden Ivey. I think he was a big winner in this draft. Travion Williams signed as a free agent with the Celtics. Sasha Stefanovic got picked up by the Spurs. Both of those guys are going to have to earn their way, go through the summer league, go through the G League, whatever it might be. You know, there's always the overseas option. I think that's much more viable now that COVID has, you know, been a little bit, I don't want to say it's over, but things are a little bit more manageable now going back and forth overseas. You know, the other part of it too is, you know, at least in Sasha Stefanovic's case, this is a guy who doesn't, you know, need to be a professional basketball player to be successful. He's got two degrees. I know he wants to play. He wants to get into basketball. He wants basketball to be a career. It's a great opportunity for him. So, obviously, Purdue fans will be wishing both of those guys well. You know, and obviously the last thing I have on here is the untimely death of Caleb Swanigan. Just a tragic story. I mean, just a really, really sad story. I don't have to tell you this. You're well aware of it. But, you know, from what Caleb Swanigan came from, for him to reach those heights and then for things to end this way, you know, after he didn't stick in the NBA, just tragic. I mean, it was an inspirational story that just ended terribly. I mean, absolutely gut-wrenchingly awful. And, obviously everyone's hearts go out to his friends and family and, you know, Purdue basketball, which obviously I'm sure took this hard. Because the Caleb Swanigan that you saw, the Caleb Swanigan I dealt with, I think was very different than the Caleb Swanigan that those guys saw behind the scenes. I think you know, for as stoic and as, you know, sometimes machine-like and as business-like as he was, that was the way he put himself out there publicly. But I think privately, I think he was close with some of his teammates, PJ Thompson, Vince Edwards, Carson Edwards to a certain extent. I think he was closer with his coaches, you know, than, you know, people might have realized, even though, you know, part of what made him great was his, you know, his determination and his drive and the stubbornness that came with that, you know, was something that I'm sure made for some terse exchanges at times, but his heart was in the right place. He wanted to be great. Purdue wanted him to be great, and ultimately he was great. And for him to have, you know, escaped the hopelessness of his childhood and to have become that player, you know, I think was just a story that I will never see again. It's just really hard to imagine that ever happening again. And that regimented lifestyle, that structure, that almost unbelievable work ethic and personal discipline, all that stuff that made you kind of look at him sometimes and be like, man, has this kid had any fun? Has he had a chance to be a kid? And if not, what happens? What happens when he gets older? Well, that life was what he needed, as it turned out, I think it's fair to say. I think he needed that structure. He knew he needed that structure. The people around him knew he needed that structure. And when he didn't have that structure, the things he was born into, you know, are things that you just don't walk away from. The genetics he possessed were always going to make him one of the largest human beings you've ever seen. And I've seen his older brother. I've been around his older brother a little bit. The largest human I think I've ever seen. And I covered Isaac Haas. I've covered Zach Edey. That is the nature of Caleb Swanigan's genetics. The weight was always an issue when, you know, his NBA career didn't stick. You know, I don't know what kind of influences, you know, got with him, but his lifestyle changed dramatically. And sadly, it was ultimately his undoing, and a very quick undoing. And it is just heartbreaking. It is just a really sad story. And, you know, Caleb Swanigan, you know, won't soon be forgotten around Purdue, nor should he be. That sophomore season he had was, you know, probably the finest individual season, you know, Purdue has had since Glenn Robinson. And that is a mouthful because they've had great players at Purdue. But it is really unfortunate. I don't have to tell you that, but it was a big story this week. I did want to touch on it again. I do have a column on our site at goldenblack.com kind of outlining more of this if you want to go and read that. We'll have all sorts of recruiting coverage on our site all weekend long in the next week. I will be at the Charlie Hughes Classic here all weekend. Lots of basketball recruiting coverage to come. Lots of video to come. So please stay tuned to goldenblack.com. This video was 28 minutes. If you listen to all of this, God bless you. You are truly the finest among us because I can barely listen to myself talk for that long. If you did, then I have a special respect for you because you've got to be one of the most focused, toughest individuals I've ever been around. So if you did listen, thank you very much. If you checked out 20 minutes ago, can't say I blame you. But I do want to thank you for listening. I do want to thank you for watching. I do want to thank the Purdue Union Club Hotel, home of the Boiler Up Bar and the 811 Bistro, for your continued support. Next week, we will be back with other people. Alan, Tom, whoever wants to come on here will come on here. So we will talk to you again next week with next week's goldenblack.com Saturday simulcast. So thank you so much, everybody. Sorry for my long-windedness. It's kind of what I do.